The Art Dealer Diaries are brought to you by Medicine Man Gallery, located for over 26 years in Tucson, Arizona, specializing in antique Native American art, early Western art, including the famed Maynard Dixon, as well as modern art. You can find everything online at medicinemangallery.com. There's over 6,000 objects to select from. Also, the Charles Bloom Murder Mystery Series, written by yours truly, me, Mark Sublett. There are 7 books in the series, and they follow the protagonist Charles Bloom through all the intrigue of the art world set in Santa Fe and the Navajo Nation. These can be found on Audible, eBooks, Amazon, and of course, the gallery at medicinemangallery.com. Jim Woodside came out of his desert enclave painting today, and it was a wonderful podcast, unexpected but wonderful. Jim lives in Boston, and of course, he's kind of at the heart of some of the things that are going on with the coronavirus right now, and he had planned a trip way ahead of time, and he got here in early March and been in southern Arizona near Benson. It was really interesting to talk to him about what it was like to be basically in isolation and doing what he loves to do, painting. And we talked about some of those feelings that go on and what people can do, and as well as discussed his relationship as a teacher and the importance of art in teaching, and you know what his philosophy is about art. I think this is a wonderful podcast for people to listen to who have concerns about isolation, depression, fear, to maybe give you an uplift. I know it gave me an uplift, so I hope you enjoy this one. I did. This is podcast number 2. We've done one before with Jim Woodside. Jim's in town. And we thought, you know, we should have an artist on that's here right in the midst of coronavirus, get a little sense of what life is. He brought in this wonderful portrait. For those people watching on YouTube can see it's himself. And read what it says, Jim.
The title, it's a little bit long. Some of it's written on the piece, but I'll read it from the back. It says, self-quarantined, apparently, in the Arizona desert in a green shirt.
How many bottles of wine had you opened at that
point? Well, it wasn't that much. I might have had a glass or two, but it's a strange time. And, you know, without thinking too much about it, I guess the title certainly reflects that, definitely. But we try to keep a little bit of a humor about it, too. So hence the green shirt.
Well, I mean, you kind of got stuck out here in a way, didn't you? I mean, you've been out. So you live in Boston, outside of Boston. Yeah, you teach there.
Yeah.
All these are things available on his first podcast, for those who want to hear it who haven't.
Yeah.
But you had planned this in advance, and you came out. When did you get out here?
I got out here 2 weeks ago tomorrow.
Uh-huh.
And this was, you know, I treasure these trips. This is like my fourth or fifth painting trip out here. And they're super productive for me. And I, you know, I kind of just... bad choice of words, but quarantine myself in the desert. I wasn't thinking about any of that, and paint and paint and paint. And so that was what I was going to do again this trip. That's what I have been doing, but I did not anticipate this kind of ominous cloud over everything.
Yeah, I mean, when you left, it wasn't like this at all. We hadn't shut down Europe. We hadn't done any of that kind of stuff.
No, there was concern. Certainly at the school where I teach, we have a lot of international students, and it messed up their travel plans, especially the kids going back to Asia. And, you know, they're starting to get concerned, but everything has happened so quickly and day by day that I none of us could have ever anticipated this kind of trajectory, I suppose.
But, yeah. And so those kids, are they going to be stuck here, or did they get out, or what happened?
A lot of them were stuck on campus, but now they have gone back to China, and I don't know when they'll come back.
Yeah.
It's, you know, everything is changing day by day, but and our school is actually going to an online format when we start up again in a few weeks.
Yeah, and how do you, have you ever done that before?
Oh, God, no.
Yeah.
No. So this is all new.
Yeah.
teach, and we've had some meetings online about it and already, and So it will be interesting for sure. But you know, how you teach art online, and artists are nothing if not adaptable, and we'll come up with something. It won't be the same as being in a studio, but yeah.
And sure. What are you teaching right now at school?
Most primarily drawing, but also I work with the seniors doing independent work. So, you know, there's, you know, we'll adapt to what we can do online with that.
Right. Yeah. And I'm sure, it's gotta be a stressful time, especially for a senior, because they're probably at this point have already gotten accepted to schools, I would assume.
Yeah. They've got their plans in place, but the end of the year is a real celebratory time. You know, they have an individual exhibit and we have some big shows at the end of the year. So those aren't out of the question yet, but it's definitely a time none of us will at the school forget.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. And though it is nice, I would say, as for yourself, as you actually have a job that pays. For a lot of artists, that's not a...
Yeah, that's true. Knock on wood. We hope that we can keep things going there. But yeah.
I'm sure you can.
Yeah.
And so you've been out. You got out here 2 weeks ago.
Yeah.
And right now where you are is kind of a... developed more into a hotspot a little bit, hasn't it? Is it in the Boston area a little bit?
I think over the last couple of weeks in Massachusetts, it has, there has been a good bit, especially actually in the county that we live in. I don't know exactly if it's, how much of a hotspot, I don't know.
Yeah.
But definitely more than, and from what I hear from talking to people back home, my wife, it's much more of a ghost town than I have seen right around Tucson.
Yes. Yeah, I think we're taking it very seriously in Tucson, as everyone should. I mean, even in the gallery we have, you're not allowed to get closer than 3 feet. You got to do the distancing, and even with the clients, if they want to come see, they got to play by the rules. And that's a very interesting thing to do.
It is. And you're the physician, so you will know this better than I, but it's so different in terms of how we interact with one another. But I guess the idea is that if we all adhere to these procedures, that it'll sort of tamp
that's right. And it will.
Tamp it down.
You just have to be incredibly judicious in what you do. Just on this podcast table, before you come, we clean it off. After you come, we clean it off. Clean all the doors, half a dozen times a day or more. You just follow all those things, and you even showing jewelry, we use, rubber gloves.
Oh, really?
So, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. So
it might be overkill, but I'm cool with overkill.
I don't know if it's overkill. But I think it's a good thing to do. The irony, of course, as we're talking about this, is that, me getting away to paint in the desert again it's probably the safest place I can possibly be.
For sure. I mean, you're down by Benson, right?
Just outside of Benson, Mescal, Benson area. Yeah.
Yeah. And how did you find that place?
This was a couple of years ago, searching around for some out of the way places that I could paint that would welcome someone, and you have a feel for what you see on Airbnb and so forth. And so the woman who owns this ranch has, we've become good friends, and so I've been back a number of times to paint and shown her my work as well, and she's got a good eye, and so it's an interesting thing.
Yeah, she enjoys it.
Yeah.
And how do you like painting that? I mean, because it's a different desert. It's not really as much Saguaro-ish over there, right? Rolling hills and things.
And I do miss the saguaros. Like my first couple of years out here painting, I did a number of those, it's the present thing. You got to do those. It's a rite of passage, and I'm not done with it either, but I find the desert down there really, really beautiful in a different way. I don't know the exact, I don't have the exact language for the geography of it, but it
high desert.
Yeah.
I think so. Yeah. Probably so.
But it has a kind of wonderful dusty appeal that I really like.
Uh-huh. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, 'cause you've painted in these kind of, I mean, you painted Antarctica, for God's sakes.
Yeah, yeah. And I find that any area I'm painting has a kind of power to it, has a kind of voice to it. And if I'm attracted enough to that, then it will emerge in the work more and more. Mm-hmm. And that's part of it for me.
Yeah. Yeah, and I've seen a real change, I think. It's hard to describe. I mean, your paintings have the same voice, and they will always have the same voice, mm-hmm. which is what I love about it. But I have seen a change, you know, getting into the environment, into the desert, and how you look at things a little differently, yeah. and your palette's a little differently, yeah. I think. Yeah. Blues are a little bluer, and, you know, I don't know if that's true, but that's how I see it.
Oh, that's true, and I definitely feel more... comfortable is the word, but I know exactly what I'm, you know, how to approach this as I sit out there. When I first started doing this, this was kind of this overwhelming beauty. And, you know, you have to be careful to kind of not be eclipsed by that, you know. And so in some ways, I found myself, this, you know, choosing views and things to work from that were maybe not as spectacular. Because I then could make them, you know, I could do my own thing with them. Now I feel much more immediately at home when I sit down and I start to work in this environment. And there is a kind of, and the way that I paint always mm-hmm. is kind of urgent, angular kind of mark making. It does, in my mind, it lends itself to this geography. It's why I felt so natural coming to do it. And I do think that a lot of artists, you know, you paint here long enough and you end up in geometry class. I mean, it's just gonna, you know.
Well, it's everywhere, right? I mean, it's the rocks, the cactus, the spines, even the animals. I mean, the scales of those snakes and the...
Absolutely. And the last number of paintings I've done, you know, from this current trip, one of the things that's been in my mind quite a bit has been some of the Native American blankets that actually that I've seen at your shop and the books that that Kathleen gave me one of my last trips. So just this beautiful reduced simplicity, and I thought this last summer too. I would love to be able to do paintings that are as unambiguous as a Navajo blanket, as an Indian blanket. That clarity is amazing to me. And those are the kind of things I think about. I mean, I'm not so much interested in picture making as I am in experience making, experience sharing.
Yeah, the emotion of what you see and feel while you're there. Yeah, so when I look at a painting, like we have two on the walls here for people who are watching YouTube, that when you look at those as a viewer like I do, you know, I feel on the one on the right next to me from your shot actually is, I feel the heat, the intensity, the humidity, the moment for sure.
Yeah, and that's really I'm glad that you would say that, because that's what I'm trying. That's what I want them to be about. I mean, it's not like I'm painting thinking I've got to get this emotion, you know.
Right. But you can't do it that
but
way, right?
No,
just the opposite.
It's just kind of the way I work, and I want the experience to reflect that time and that place and that day and that whatever, the nervousness I might have had about the storm coming or snakes or anything else, you know? And the more I do this, I think I even said in an email exchange or text exchange with you the other day, showing you a new painting, sometimes I'll sit in the presence of what I'm looking at, and I do this a lot, and I'll kind of look at it and I'll do a little bit of drawing, but almost none. I start right in. It's almost like I try by being in the presence of to kind of recreate the environment or the experience with one little bit of DNA, you know, I'm extrapolating from there. So That's how I think about it. That's how I do it.
And you're painting these on the spot?
Yeah. Definitely on the spot.
Yeah, and plein air.
Yeah. Sometimes I'll go back in the studio and I will work on it a bit more and touch it up. Yeah. But even that is immediate, like, mm-hmm. you know, close to the environment. I'll touch them up inside some, but it's, yeah, it's definitely.
And the big ones, like you did this big, you have 30-40 that you showed me.
Uh-huh.
And so same thing done outside and then taken in and worked on.
Yeah, taken in and worked on a little bit. And, you know, painting outside, you know, you learn to come up with all these ridiculous solutions. Right now I have a ladder, an old wooden ladder, and a piece of lattice nailed to it, and nails coming out of that, and that I lean that up against something to hang the canvas on, and mm-hmm. that's functions as an easel. You know,
you got a picture of it?
Send
me one.
I will.
I'll put it up on this podcast.
Oh, I definitely do.
Well, I think that's what artists have to do, right? They have to be creative in the ways that they come up with how they're going to paint for sometimes.
You figure out a way to do it, you know, and I tell kids this. I mean, there's always a reason not to work. There's always a reason, you know, there's always a reason not to. I don't have the right paint. I don't have the right... The weather's not quite right, my this or that, I think you just have to figure out how to do it, and you give up the idea of making it not only perfect but totally contained and complete and controlled. I just do it with what I have.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm not sure if I'm being clear, but.
No, it's true. I mean, I think a lot of artists have a very hard time knowing when they're done.
Yeah.
Clearly you do not.
No, that's gotten easier over the years, actually. Yeah. In fact, even that drawing I did, that we looked at, the self-portrait and some other things, I could do a painting or a drawing. Maybe it only took me a couple of hours, but it took me 40 years to leave it alone, you know?
Right.
And that's really how I think about it sometimes, you know?
Yeah, when not to add anymore.
When not to add anymore. There was an artist once that said, I don't remember who, that said, how do you know when it's finished? And he said, when it doesn't bother me anymore. And some famous artist. And I like that. And as I've gotten older, it bothers me less and less, you know? I just...
Right.
Yeah.
And I've heard that before from other artists.
Yeah.
And I don't even know if they know that saying, but they've said, when I quit seeing the imperfections, I'm kind of there.
Yeah. It just, and also painting quickly and painting a lot helps me with that because the subsequent painting becomes, you know, the less important. Mm-hmm. You know, you move to the next one, you know, and, so that's part of the process.
Yeah. And when you have one that isn't as successful, what do you do with that? Do you get rid of it? Or just say,
I'm sorry,
do you scrape it?
I don't usually finish a whole painting and then scrape it. I will scrape off parts of it.
Yeah.
And then as I proceed, and I could think that a painting, there's a nice arrangement of rocks and clouds and it looks dramatic, and that's what I'm going to paint. And then I start doing it, and there's some interesting little red weeds coming out that I didn't notice before. You know, that becomes the subject. They become more interesting.
The focal point. Yeah.
So I guess that's I will change. I will redirect it. Mm. I don't think any of them are so important that I have to stick to this thing.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. And do you look for that focal point when you're picking a subject matter to paint?
Yeah.
Or does it just kind of hit you?
I guess it's kind of both.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I look at forms and subject matter that, yes, attract me, but also lend themselves to the way that I paint, you know? Mm. So
angularity-wise, you
yeah,
mean?
Just just the way that I work. I go, I could see myself working on that, you know? And I think that there's a kind of symbiotic thing there. As an artist gets older, you figure out what's good for you and what works for you. And it's not just what attracts you. It's what you can
actually do.
Yeah, and control and redirect and, you know.
Maybe that becomes what attracts you to some extent.
Exactly, exactly.
I can paint this. I don't know if I can paint that.
And I want to, you know, yeah.
Have you done the Grand Canyon yet?
No, no, I've got a lot of places to go.
Yeah.
I have not. In fact, I've only been there once, and that was my wife and I drove through there in like 1985, and I think it's still there. And
yeah,
I'll, a little bigger. I'll have to go up there. But I also try to not, you know, I try to find forms, whether, like I said before, maybe that aren't always so grand, mm-hmm. whether it's a small way, arrangement in some little valley or something like that, or some little mini canyon that I see. And I will try to find something that I can impose on that minor situation that will have some grandness to it, will extrapolate into something more. So I don't, you know, I think it's the same concept of you can go all around the world, and I've known some people that have traveled everywhere, and they're still the most provincial people in the world. And then I know other people who have hardly traveled at all, and they're really worldly. So it's how you perceive and what you do with the information that you have.
I see. So you don't, it's not a matter of getting a grand image. It's really a matter of finding something that works for how you paint.
Works for how I paint, yeah. And the environment where I am and my own conditions, how I set up, where I'm staying. There's a kind of, I don't know, it's kind of corny, but there's a kind of mystery to it, and there's a kind of theater to it all. You know,
You feel that every time, the theater of it?
Yeah, I do. I do. I mean, you don't want to fake it. And I think that it becomes more interesting that way and more doable for me. Much more exciting. You know, I think that there needs to be that kind of drama. You know, maybe it's romantic, but I do see it that way.
Yeah, well, I can see it. I mean, I need to see settings to be able to write often.
Yeah.
I mean, I need the sense, the smells, all the senses to be able to really, you know, put it down in words. It makes sense that you need that same kind of thing to be able to capture it in painting.
Yeah, and I think in any art that you're doing, you do have to have those kinds of awareness of your conditions around you. I mean, I think it was Bob Dylan said something like, you have to protect what gets in your head and or what goes in your head, you know, however. I mean, that's true, you know, you it's true. Yeah.
So now you've been doing this for 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And blood pressure is probably down a little bit, right? Relaxing.
Yeah. Way. Oh, I feel great out there. I'm a little worried about this whole, you know, world event and my family in particular.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And they're back in.
They're all back in Massachusetts.
Yeah. So, you know, are you prepared yourself yet to get back into that groove yet mentally?
It's coming,
tomorrow.
Yeah, it's coming tomorrow. Tomorrow night, I've got a red eye flight. I will be. You know, I've got a painting I'm finishing down there. In Benson right now. I'll get that done, and I've got some things to wrap up. But when I'm here, I'm really in the moment. I'm really present in the moment. You know, and it's a cliche. Everybody wants, you know, but it's true.
Yeah.
And
everybody can do that.
Yeah.
I'm
grateful for my time here. I'm grateful for the place being here. I'm grateful for you for introducing it to me, the connection years ago, which we talked about
right.
In Version one, Godfather one of the, but yeah, you're the one that brought me down here.
Oh, that's nice. So, yeah. Yeah. Well, you know, I found you on in a magazine, and you did, it was on Antarctica.
Yeah.
Yeah. And, I could see your chops. I mean, it was just like, this guy has what it takes, you know? And sometimes that is all you need to do as an artist, quite frankly, is put out the content, put out the material, and they will find you, I think, if it's, you know, if it's quality enough, you know, people are going to find you. I mean, artists always ask me, well, how do I get in a gallery? How do, you know, well, it's not that easy sometimes. You know, every gallerist has their own way they see the world and their art and their gallery and how, what their, what they want in it. And, you know, I've only seen one Jim Woodside. So, you know.
Well, that's, thank you. That's really a quite a compliment, but I appreciate it, and the relationship here, all of it, it's been great for me. Yeah,
it's and it, you know, and it works both ways. I mean, you have these relationships sometimes that maybe you don't sell a ton of paintings for a while, and maybe it takes effort on both ends. But if you both commit to it and say, well, I'm still there if you are.
Yeah,
and it takes a while sometimes to build an audience. And I think we're really starting to, and you've been an artist for a while, but I think we've really started to build an audience for your work. And, you know, especially the desert landscapes that you're doing now are just incredibly convincing to me, as this is something that I should have in my own home, which I do. And
well, that means a lot to me, especially especially from folks who have spent their whole life out here. You know, I think that, you know, hearing that what I've done will resonate with someone like you or others who I just intuitively know, they know the desert, they know the landscape. Heidi, who I've come to know, down in Benson, you know, she's been here for practically her whole life as well. And she, you know, sometimes I'll ask her those same kinds of things. And I think that is really, really important, you know. And yeah, in terms of the business of it, I just keep doing them, you know. Yeah. And I think they're getting better. And I think that will come. But I don't, if an artist worries about that all the time, drive yourself nuts, yeah. You know. You know, I remember once when I was in my 20s in New York, and I was really down about, you know, I just not selling stuff and this, and I was talking to my mentor, the teacher of mine at the time, who had stayed close to Salvatore Scarpitta, and he said, "You're just lucky they haven't found out what you're up to yet," you know. And I thought, you know, he could turn that around into this. I think, well, okay, all right. So anyway.
Well, and you've had to, you know, pass that wisdom on to your kids that you're teaching too.
Yeah, they are, since they're high school kids, but they're incredibly gifted from, you know, from around the world. This is an arts high school. And I don't talk as much to them about that career sales aspect of it. They're a little bit young for that.
You think?
Sometimes I do.
I just wonder if they are, though, you know?
I mean, well, I guess it's a debate. I mean, it's not.
They're headed there, right? They're headed there.
And
very quickly.
Especially as time has, you know, they have to grow up a lot quicker.
Yeah.
You know? It's not something I avoid, but maybe it's just that I don't want it to be a shadow over the production of art, you know, and the learning of art. So I don't try to dwell on it too much, but I don't have a great answer for you.
Because you think it's more important to encourage than to say, here's the realities?
Yeah. I mean, first of all, I don't know exactly what the realities are. I mean, I think that good artists will find a way to contribute.
Yeah, I agree.
And they'll do things.
Yep.
And it's not as clearly divided as it was when I was coming along, where, you know, you went to commercial art or you went to fine art.
Right.
It's this big mishmash now. And
yeah.
So that part is quite different. I think if someone wants to make art, that they're going to do it, you know? I think
I agree with that 100%.
In a way, they don't choose it. It chooses them. So, you know. And if they, down the road, do something else and they don't, that's fine too.
Mm-hmm.
You know, being an artist, you know, a young person learning like that, those skills will help you in whatever you do. You know, learning to problem solve, learning to adapt, learning to be innovative, learning to
look
fail.
At your environment.
Yeah. All of it. Yes.
Right. Yeah. To me, that's the big one about art, is being in the moment of looking around at everything.
To being present.
Yeah, to being present.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that from art is what I've gotten the most of, is being present.
Well, I think that, I agree. I agree with that.
And so the kids that you teach at mm-hmm. school, and you've been doing this for now, what, 30 years?
Yeah.
What percent would you think go on to actually have a career in the arts? And you're coming from a very, you know, highbrow, you know, gifted students.
I would say most of them. I mean, they all go to art school, and then, you know, I keep track. I keep in touch with a lot of them, as you know, as they've gotten older and had families, and
mm-hmm.
some have become teachers, some have become designers and working in digital fields and things like that, and some painters and sculptors. So I think most of them still do it, but not all of them. And again, I don't, you know, some of them who want to get back in touch with me, they'll say, well, I feel bad because I'm not doing it. I don't care. You're doing whatever you're doing. You know,
right.
you're you know, whatever.
Right.
And it's you hope that you send a kid out into the world with some humility, some understanding about their environment, about being present, and in a way, they're just one little antidote to all the other garbage that's around, and so. Though that's good enough. You know?
Yeah. It's interesting that they have it's hard for them to come back to you if they haven't stayed in art.
Sometimes it is, because they feel a little
failure.
They don't know, or they feel guilty.
Yeah.
I said, no, don't. It's not like that.
Yeah. No. I mean, life is a river.
No.
And it takes lots of branches.
Yeah.
You can't predict where it is. And, you know, they may still get back to art or something like it.
That's right. And I do believe that art time is different than regular time. You know, like I was saying before, you know, that we can work on a drawing or a painting for an hour, but it took you 40 years to leave it alone. I do think that's true with an artist too.
Mm.
I mean, somebody can come back to it later in life or at a point when they need to. And it was like they never stopped, you know. So I don't presume to know that, you know. I think that, you know, like I said before, I think in our previous podcast, the older I get at this, teaching and making art, the less I feel I know. And the last recording was a couple of years ago, so I know even less than I did then.
Well, it is. It's always changing.
Yeah.
And it will continue to change. I think the one thing that won't change is that there's creative human beings out there that have to express themselves. And
We need them too.
Oh, yeah. We do need them.
Yeah.
Are they in back east, are they supporting, they being government and states, supporting primary art schools and things like that for kindergarten through fifth, sixth grade?
You know, I can't speak officially about that, but I think the general trend has been no. I mean, those things get cut out of schools, and those things get put on the back burner. You know, I think that we really lose something there. You know, I think.
Oh, I agree.
I mean, when I was coming up, a long time ago, you know, I think where there was more funding in schools or things like that, you know, we had all these big music programs and art mm-hmm. programs, we weren't even aware of it. It was just kind of like, yeah, that's how it is.
Right.
And it's I don't think it's like that anymore.
Yeah, I don't think so. Is there anything we can do, you think, about that?
Well, solution? We're going to get into a political discussion, but yeah, there's things I think so. I think the trends of what we value and what we emphasize in terms of bringing a young person along have to be reordered.
Mm.
You know, I think that. I have a friend in Korea, is a parent of a former student of mine, and he's about my age, maybe a year or two older, or maybe younger, I don't know. But anyway, he's a really, really big deal in cancer research and science in Korea and Asia and in the United States as well.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, with massive grants, government grants to hire young people and build research centers and that kind of thing. And he's a real innovative thinker. And I'm still friends with him. And he says that the problem that he has in getting young people, young doctors and researchers to work with him is that, you know, they all want to, and he'll get the top people, top scorers and mm-hmm. things like that. But they don't think creatively. They don't think like artists. And he always promoted that in his own children. And and this is at a really high level, and he's telling me that. So I remember that.
Well, you can get so focused.
Yeah.
I mean, I can say that from self-experience. You get so focused in science and, you know, medicine, whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
you can't see anything else.
Yeah.
You're blinded. You literally have blinders on.
Yeah.
And unless somebody says, hey, here's some other things, you should do this while you're, you know, studying your periodic table. And
yeah.
It might open your mind up. It definitely opens the sides of your brain up. And it's really important. And part of that, I think, unfortunately, lies to the parents, that they also focus sometimes their children too much on just saying, well, you know, you need to be this, focus on this, don't focus on anything, quit drawing.
Yeah.
Put those crayons down. You're not going to make a living with
well,
crayons.
Well, the pressure on them is so intense now, and the presentation of choices, though I don't really think they're, you know, because whether it's with the internet or whatever, but I mean, there are so many choices are presented to young people all the time, to all of us, that in some way it's like, you know, the myth that they're told over and over again is you can do anything you want, the whole world's there. But actually, I think that it just increases anxiety, you know, and
because they can't figure out what their road is.
Yeah, if the whole world is this meteor shower of opportunities coming at you, you know, what are you going to do? So I think that kind of simplicity, the clarity of making art, helps you kind of navigate that stuff.
Mm.
I do believe that, you know, and that's where I get back to the idea of, you know, I'm not trying to make the next painter or the next this, but I'm trying to make a person that will see the world clearly.
Mm.
And you know, they'll probably do it in art, but that's what this is about, you know?
Yeah, it builds on something.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And
you clearly have been successful in that.
Well, I hope so.
Yeah, they kept you as a teacher.
But that's very, very, very satisfying. And, you know, and I try to live what I talk about as I paint, you know, those same kinds of things, the same kinds of distilling things down to some kind of essence and some sort of clarity.
I think you should give your kids the opportunity for extra points if they listen to this podcast.
Oh, I will, especially now because we have to do teaching online
for a
while, and I really have no idea how to do that. So we're going to come up with some stuff. But yeah, you just gave me a great idea. First assignment, listen to me talk, and then tell me if you learned anything.
Yeah, and write two paragraphs of what art is important and why it's important to Jim Woodside and his kids.
That's good. I will.
So I've got lesson plan number one for you.
Oh, no, we can stretch this out for a couple of weeks.
Well, you got two podcasts, too, so you can have them go back to the other one.
Oh, that's true. Yeah.
And get if you want them to. You may not want them to know the backstory.
Oh, no, there's nothing I'm not.
We didn't cover anything bad. I can't remember.
No. I'm a pretty honest, straightforward person about those things. I don't, you know.
That's one of the notes you should write down, children.
Yeah.
He's going to be looking for that quote.
Yeah. I think that, I think if you're a good artist, a good teacher, that kind of humility, you know, that you don't know all the answers and that this is a circuitous route, this whole process, I think that that's important. It's also kind of comforting for a young person, I think, you know, because, you know, that, like I said, about the expectations and the intensity of...
Yeah, it's an intense world. There's got so much information coming at them.
Yeah, and...
I think this is one of the problems with the current pandemic, that such for fear is there is so much of social media, and I mean, it's a double-edged sword. It's good for getting information out and for people hopefully following guidelines, but at the same time, I think there's an immense amount of fear that develops no matter where you are, you know, and sometimes I think it's good to turn off that for a little bit, walk in the desert or in the woods and take a deep breath and relax.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. And I think everyone says that they would, but actually doing it is something else, you know, because it really is true. You know, it really is true, this kind of bombard, this cascade of information all the time. And it would have said that prior to any of this pandemic, and hopefully this thing will level out soon, but all of that information, that it there's so much anxiety to it, you know.
We do the count.
Yeah.
You know, how many worldwide cases, how many deaths, how many in our state? And we're all guilty of it, including myself.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And but part of that, you know, that isolation of going into the desert or whatever environment you're in can help you put that in perspective. And I actually think artists are good at helping put that in perspective.
I agree 100%. I've talked to three artists since this kind of exploded, including yourself. And they're all like, you know, this is kind of what I do anyway.
Yeah.
You know, I self-isolate, I paint, I focus on what I do, I create, and that's what I do. And I can't worry about the rest of it. I can't worry about the sales. I can't worry about anything else.
Yeah.
I have to worry about just doing what I can do. And so if more people could be like artists, I think it would be a better...
I think that that's true. I do. And, you know, I even think about myself coming out into the desert this time of year and all, like, all right, there, all this crazy stuff going on. There must be some reason I'm out here doing this right now. So, you know, I'm not saying I'm on some grand mission. I never think that way, but I try to keep what I'm doing in perspective relative to the greater world and so forth.
Yeah, yeah. And the moment in time, being present.
Yeah.
Being present in the moment of time.
Yeah.
Everyone that listens to the podcast, you should go be present in the moment of time. Go look at a sunrise or sunset today. Take some deep breaths if you can. If you can go outside, do go outside. And I think you'll feel a little better.
Absolutely. I have no doubt about that. Yeah.
Yeah, I think it's a good place to end.
All right.
Can't shake your hand anymore.
Oh, no, we'll do an Air 5 or something. Yeah, but...
well, we'll go look at some more art.
All right.
And, you know, that's what we're going to do. Go create. Go create, people.
All right. Thanks, Mark.
Jim Woodside, Art Dealer Diaries. And remember, this is for extra credit for all those kids out there that are in class.
That's right. Thank you. Thank you very much.
Yeah, you should.